But the biggest mistake you can make at this point in the cycle is chasing the pump. So the the advice that we have, the not financial advice, life advice, don't be a chaser. Hold your high conviction. Right. Let the market come to you.
Yes, you let the pump come to you. Don't be needy. Let the pump come to you.
Yeah, you don't have to respect the pump, right. Okay? That just means aping into stupid things. Let the pump come to you. Bankless Nation is the fourth Friday of October, and the Friday, the roll-up, might I remind you, right before Halloween, which means we do something special. David and I are in costume today, recording this roll-up, and I'm looking across the screen, looking at this co-host that I thought I knew. He's got suspenders on. He's got a yellow t-shirt.
Ducks.
David,
shirt. Yeah, uh-huh.
Dude, you are one of your NFTs.
Of course.
The Solana NFT thing,
yeah,
right?
I'm a mad lad. Yeah.
Uh-huh. You're a mad lad today.
I'm a mad lad today. Yes.
So
I am a mad lad. If the podcast editors could put the mad lad on the screen. In fact, just put it right over Ryan's face so you can do the A/B test for my mad lad versus me. I look exactly the same as my mad lad.
It's actually really good. Yeah, this is really good.
My suspenders aren't actually clipped to anything. I'm wearing athletic shorts.
The third year in a row that you have dressed up as your NFT.
Yeah, I've only got one NFT left, so I need to buy another NFT after next year.
Yeah, you're going to buy some more this cycle. Yeah, okay, probably. now do me. Who am I?
You are Sam Bankman-Fried. It is. I didn't even need to ask. You are wearing a massive curly-haired wig and an FTX t-shirt. It's so simple. You need to gain a few pounds, but other than that.
It's so perfect, actually. And do you want to hear my Sam Bankman-Fried impression that I prepared for you guys?
I would like nothing left.
So I'm like, I'm going to be taking the witness stand later today and explaining to the jury that from an EV perspective, like, I think we made the right calls. And that's what some of your listeners don't know, David. I think there's like, to some extent, to which one of the major exchanges in 2022 had to die, and it just happened to be FTX. Kind of mid.
That was pretty good. Mid. That was really good. Yeah, you're just not on enough amphetamines. I don't care how many pots of coffee you're on. You're not matching him on.
I'm not SBF energy.
Yeah.
Well, I hope he brings the energy today.
You're not vibrating like SBF was on our show.
Well, that's actually a true story, though. So he is taking the stand today. I am taking the stand today. So this is
good luck.
This is not only a Halloween costume. This is I don't have any solidarity with SBF. I don't wish him well, actually. But we'll see what happens today.
You're commemorating the day.
I'm commemorating the day we took down 1 year. It's almost like a year ago that all of this happened.
November 8th, I think, was the day. Yeah. So next week will be 1 year since the fall of FTX.
Yeah, I'm celebrating the outing of a fraud and the cleaning up of this space, which we've been doing a lot of over the last year. But tell us, what do we have for the agenda besides these fantastic costumes that we're sporting?
In addition to all the things that we've already teased, we get to say welcome to Uptober.
Ryan, yes.
We got a double-digit week this week. We were talking about it. It finally came. Everyone pat yourselves on the back. We got that. Bitcoin is up 15%. That feels great. Can we get it again? Okay, now the next question is, when is the next time that we get double-digit weeks for 2 weeks in a row?
Oh. 2 weeks in a row. 1 week's not enough for you?
Like, can we just bask for this? It's never enough.
I want to bask this week in enjoying this because this could mean the end of the bear market. Like, I feel like this could be a very significant week, actually, for us. Yes. We also have the Wall Street Journal blatantly lying, blatantly spreading misinformation about crypto, associating it with terrorism and failing to retract it. And citizen journalist and friend of the show, Nick Carter, is on their ass to do something about it. I love it. I love the facts coming out. So we're talking about that. What else we got, David?
New York Attorney General charges DCG and Gemini for fraud. So like Gemini was pointing at DCG and DCG was pointing at Gemini, the New York Attorney General was like, you know what? We're taking both of you in.
Both you guys.
Both you guys. Yeah. Just charges. So we'll talk about that. Like Ryan said, SBF about to testify. And also, a Uniswap app chain gets launched. But by whom? Who launched the Uni chain? We will talk about that. I think that this is a great story that totally went under the radar this week. Ryan, did you know that the Uniswap app chain got launched?
David, you're so excited about this.
I think this is a great story, and no one's paying attention to it.
This is David's breaking news journalist.
Breaking news, the Uniswap app chain got launched, and Uniswap didn't deploy it. The Uniswap Foundation didn't deploy it. Who deployed the Uni chain?
This is a bit tinfoil hat, but it's definitely get to that later in the episode for sure. Before we begin, we got to shout out our friends and sponsors over at Doppel.
Doppel.
Yeah, so Doppel, not to be confused with Doppelganger, of which I am quite clearly SBF's Doppelganger today.
I've Doppel. Always thought this, actually.
SBF, RSA, huh?
Three letters? What's going on
name?
Here?
Yeah, something weird. But people, you can't trust people who use their middle name as their main name. Anyway, something else you can't trust on the internet is all the phishing links that you get. And Doppel plays whack-a-mole with all of the fishers. So, David, we have started using this service as of about 2 months ago, and they have done a fantastic job. Every time a phishing site, a fake bank list comes up, or a fake Ryan Sean Adams account on Twitter or Instagram. You know what they do, David?
They bang him.
They doppel them right on the head. They just doppel them right on the head. And it's a fantastic service because there are more and more phishing scams and links going on. And if you are a project, a dApp developer in the space of crypto, if you have a community, you need to protect your community or at least do what you can. Doppel is the service to go do that. They have something going on, I believe, for Bankless listeners as well. A free trial. Can you tell people about that?
Yeah, free limited time trial to Bankless members. There's a link in the show notes to get started. Also, doppel.com/sign-up. Overall, it's just like the scammers, the fishers out there are automated. And so the manual reporting of counts is just not going to cut it. You need to fight fire with fire. You need to fight automation with automation. So this is what Doppel does. So if you're a project that has customer deposits, don't let doppelgangers intercept your...
Is that why they're called Doppel?
Yes. Of course.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, don't let doppelgangers intercept your customers' funds from going into your project. You want TVL. Yeah. Don't let the doppelgangers get your customers' TVL.
Take it from the guy with the FTX shirt. I know a thing or two about scammers. Stop. David, let's get to the good stuff today. Prices. You ready for this?
Yes.
Prices.
Yeah. Good looking prices on good looking charts. Bitcoin up 15% this week.
15%.
A monster green candle. We saw definitely a short squeeze. People were just caught offsides, and then they held on to their shorts for too long. And then what is a short squeeze? Well, somebody's short, and then they're like, I don't want to be short anymore. So they have to buy back their Bitcoin to stop being short, which causes the Bitcoin price to go up, which causes other people to have to do the same thing. Too many people caught on the wrong side. So Bitcoin started the week at 29,500, up 15% to 34,000. Come down a little bit off the top, so we're just below 34,000.
You know what, David? I feel nothing for the pain of the shorters, okay? That's what you get for shorting this market.
Bears deserve that. Don't short crypto. How dare you?
Yeah. I'll teach you a lesson next week, too.
Get out of here.
This is an 18th month high for Bitcoin, at least not right now, but it shot up above 35K, actually, if you look at the Kraken charts here, which, as you said, they are looking beautiful today. I love this trend line.
Way that line goes. It looks like the upwards chart emoji.
So Bitcoin with an absolutely monster week, up 15% on the week or higher, at least from the time of recording. How about Ether on the week?
Ether starting the week at $1,600, ending the week at $1,776, some freedom numbers, up 11% on the week. Also a double digit for Ether, but definitely Bitcoin won this week. It's a Bitcoin week this week.
So what does that mean for the ratio, David?
Ratio down 3.5%, down to 0.052. Not great.
Are you worried about this? Like this is some lows. It's definitely Bitcoin dominant season. Isn't it?
It's a little bit surprising. I did not expect to get here, but I have, like I said last week, I've reduced my what do you call it, average buy price.
Yeah, so you're fine with the position.
Yeah. I mean, I've already held it down to this number. I've done this once before with Heroes Capital.
We're gonna talk a little bit more about why Bitcoin is up, and I think in relation even to Ether and some other assets throughout this episode.
Bitcoin being number one doesn't happen often because it's the biggest one to move. It takes a lot more to move Bitcoin.
That's a big story, you know. And in previous cycles, Bitcoin has gone first, and that seems to be what's happening this cycle as well, David. But let's look at the global crypto market caps. Where are we at on the week?
$1.293 trillion, rocketing past 1.2, almost up to 1.3 trillion. That's nice.
Look at this. Do you know around, let's see, 3 or 4 years ago at this time, we were less than 200 million?
200 billion. Yeah, that is a 200 tiny
billion
number.
Yeah. Right. Christ.
Yeah,
so we are definitely up on that time horizon. David, there were some movers this week as well. So we talked about Bitcoin, which was up. Link RPL, Rocket Pool, and Solana had monster weeks as well. We're looking at the 7 day right here, and let me grab Solana. Up 24% on the week. I think if you span that out a little bit more, it'd be up even higher.
I think it's up 50% on the month.
Wow. And we also have Link, Chainlink, with an absolutely monster 43% on
in
the 7 day.
One week. Wow. Link, the same week that Bankless does our bull case for a Link episode. Is that coincidence? I don't think so.
RPL. I haven't listened to that, by the way. How was that?
It was very bullish.
Ripple. I always say RPL and I think Ripple for some reason. Rocket Pool.
I don't blame you.
Yeah. A monster week as well. What's interesting, I think, about some of these numbers too is remember, tokens like Solana had to go from absolutely catastrophic lows, right? So they were down like, you know, 95, 96, 97%.
When you're down 95%, it's easy to bounce back.
So Solana right now, I like to, like weeks like this, I'd like to go check the percent down from all-time highs because I think that represents something to me. So Solana, Sol token, still down 88% from all-time high versus Bitcoin, only 50% from all-time high. That's a huge difference. And Ether, 63% from all-time high. So well, let's just finish that out. Chainlink, 80% from all-time high as a benchmark.
Yeah.
So really interesting. I have a take about this, though. And this is a take we threw out during our charting episode with Ledger from Up Only earlier this week. But it's just, I think the mistake that people make at this part in the cycle, David, is they become chasers.
Yeah.
Okay. They look at the charts, the 7 days or the 30 day, and they're like, what's pumping? Oh man, my fundamental thesis about all of crypto was wrong.
Right.
So I better go change it and I better go sell my conviction assets and ape into the thing that is pumping most recently.
Yeah. Chase, right? You're chasing the pump. You're chasing the pump.
It's a classic mistake people make at this phase of the cycle. And this phase of the cycle, I think we can call it, is the early bull phase of the cycle.
Yeah.
All right? I mean, we are officially calling phase of the cycle.
Are we? Are we doing
I'm
that?
Ready to. Are you ready? Do you want to?
Yeah.
Let's call it. It's the bull phase of the cycle, guys. We're still early in the bull phase, but I think we have, this week,
sentiment
proved to
has
me,
certainly shifted.
Totally shifted. We have broken the back on the bear market, okay? Sorry, shorters. Sorry, bears. Your time is short.
I'm not sorry, shorters.
But the biggest mistake you can make at this point in the cycle is chasing the pump. So the advice that we have, the not financial advice, life advice, don't be a chaser. Hold your high conviction. Right. Let the market come to you.
Yes, you let the pump come to you. Don't be needy. Let the pump come to you.
Yeah, you don't have to respect the pump, okay? That just means aping into stupid things. Let the pump come to you is the Zen advice on Bankless this week. But David, let's get into some analysis because I think people are wondering, why is Bitcoin price up?
And I'm wondering that. Tell me.
Well, the easy answer is obviously we've got spot Bitcoin ETFs, and they're coming. And we'll talk about that after the break. But I have three other reasons that Bitcoin might be up that
More bullish reasons other than that? That's like the big one.
Well, I think the big one might still be the Bitcoin ETF. Although there are people like Arthur Hayes who say there's another reason. There's another force driving these markets. You know what that force is?
Tell me.
Global instability. War. War. Okay?
Okay.
So Arthur wrote a post this week just in general, kind of geopolitics, U.S. monetary policy, all of these things. It was called the periphery. And he said, Bitcoin is not up so much on ETF news. It's up because of war. Okay. And like he throws this chart up. This is the total amount that the U.S. has spent on war since 2001. And it amounts to about $10 trillion. This is mainly Iraq. This is Afghanistan. And now we talked about this last week. Of course, the U.S. is, Janet Yellen says the U.S. has enough to fully fund wars, essentially, in Ukraine and Israel, and to help preserve and protect their allies and preserve Pax Americana. And this is not, I don't think this is really a political view. You can politically think that that's a good idea or a bad idea. I think Arthur is taking the perspective of a trader. He's saying, okay, what does this actually mean for treasuries, for government bonds? And his conclusion is basically like, look at this chart. So this is T-bills, treasuries, the white line. This is gold in yellow, appropriately yellow. and then Bitcoin is green, okay? And so bonds took a massive hit, down about 11% since the Fed's September 20th market, whereas Bitcoin is up far more than 11%. I think by the time he posted this, it's now up to about 30%, and gold is up as well.
Is he just giving the take that I was talking about, I think, two roll-ups ago, where just like war is inflationary?
Yes.
That's basically what he's like. He's saying war is inflationary.
He probably heard the roll-up, and it was right. Like, David's right. I'm going to write a post about this.
I'm going to take that take, and I'm going to elongate it into an entire post.
Because he does a great job, because it's not just Israel and Ukraine. It's also the Asia Pacific, right?
Right.
And so the U.S., is seeing some creeping dominance from China, and it's going to protect its Pacific, Asia Pacific allies, so Japan, Taiwan, and like he posed the question, maybe China is playing the version of the game the U.S. played with the Soviets back in the 1970s and the 1980s, which is basically get them to spend.
Right.
And outspend, run out of, outspend them and win that way. And so he says, a billion here, a billion there, and soon you're talking about real money. The bond market listened to Biden's speech, read his budget, and threw a fit. That's why bonds had one of their worst weeks ever.
Mm.
So if you are a long-term U.S. Treasury holder, the most worrying thing is that the U.S. government doesn't believe it is spending too much. This is what U.S. Treasury Secretary Yellen had to say when she was asked if America can afford two wars. Yeah, no big deal, right?
Of course we can afford two wars. We can print money.
Yeah. So the conclusion is this. All major economies must ramp up production of war materials to hand to their allies in this new reality. And in this new reality, he says, I don't want to own bonds of any country, not just the U.S. Bad news bears all around. The gold and Bitcoin are starting to tell us this. So that's the first reason, other than the spot Bitcoin ETF, Bitcoin might actually be up. Yeah. The second is this one. When's the last time you looked at this this chart here, David? This countdown, I should say.
Oh, that has been a while. It has been a while.
Tell the Bankless audience what we're looking at here.
We are looking at the Bitcoin halving countdown. And it's been a while since I've seen such a low number. 165 days.
That's less
than half of a year. And 4 hours, 51 minutes from the time of recording. So hold your breath.
So this changes, right? I was looking earlier in the week, and it was like end of April. Now it's targeted April 8th.
Right.
And this is why does it change?
Why does it change? Because more mining hash power comes online. So Bitcoin is scheduled to have a halving every 4 years if hash power is held constant. But hash power never is constant. It's always up. And so the halving is actually coming sooner than 4 years because the time from a Bitcoin perspective is always speeding up.
So what does this drop us down to? Annual inflation of Bitcoin right now in block rewards. What is it about? 1.5%, 1.9%?
Oh, inflation? Oh, I'm not sure. Well, I mean, let me go check ultrasound.money, ironically, as the place to go find out what Bitcoin inflation is. Let's see. Bitcoin inflation. 1.685%. 1.7%.
It's like it's cut in half.
Yep.
So 1.7%. So there you go. The halvening is near. And, that's the second reason I have. So we've got war, fiat dollar governments printing, mm-hmm. and we've got the halvening coming up.
Those are some big catalysts. Never mind the pivot from the Fed, which, I mean, there's no indications of that, but we know that's more ammo that we have in the quiver that will happen at some point.
Yeah. And my third reason here is I think you'll resonate with this.
Yes.
It's time.
Why is Bitcoin pumping? It's time.
It's time.
It's time.
Yeah.
Sometimes markets don't need a reason.
Yeah.
the reason of bears being tired of being bearish is a catalyst because that is the zeitgeist of the time. Like one person goes like, oh, you know what? Fuck it. I'm buying. I'm done being bearish. Well, then, they message their friend. It just spreads. It spreads through crypto Twitter. People just stop bear posting and they start bull posting. Sometimes it just happens through the intrapsychic layer of humans, which is also a catalyst. And that's what I think we're saying is that's what happened this week. Like the average human just, decided that we're bullish now.
Yeah. It's like, why be bearish any longer? Why? They're putting all the pieces together.
I mean, I've always been saying that, but,
Well, I mean, but now it's the sellers now who have to be exhausted, right?
And
I
think the sellers to stop being bearish.
It's very obvious with SBF getting his day in court and all of these other things that we'll be talking about later in the episode.
Suzu in jail. Yeah.
The bad news has been absorbed by the market adequately. All of the bad news has been fully priced in. So maybe now it's just time for Bitcoin to go up. And it wouldn't be odd if this happened, because it happens every freaking 4 years, guys.
Right. As another catalyst, the 4 years. Here it is, the meme layer.
Yeah, so maybe we should all just stop overthinking it. It's time
just stop
for Bitcoin
being
to go up. David, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, talking about the Bitcoin ETF. We've got some news to talk about that. But also, we got to talk about, I think this is going to be great, calling out the BS. Nick Carter just leading a vendetta against the Wall Street Journal, because the Wall Street Journal has posted just totally debunked information that Elizabeth Warren is citing, and they can refuse to retract it. Citizen journalist Nick Carter having absolutely none of it. SBF, of course, taking the stand today, the day of recording. We sadly won't be able to comment about it, but we will share what we know. All of this and more coming up as soon as we talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred exchange for crypto in 2023. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the link in the show notes to getting started with Kraken today. Kraken Pro has easily become the best crypto trading platform in the industry. The place I use to check the charts and the crypto prices, even when I'm not looking to place a trade. On Kraken Pro, you'll have access to advanced charting tools, real-time market data, and lightning-fast trade execution, all inside their spiffy new modular interface. Kraken's new customizable modular layout lets you tailor your trading experience to suit your needs. Pick and choose your favorite modules and place them anywhere you want in your screen. With Kraken Pro, you have that power. Whether you are a seasoned pro or just starting out, join thousands of traders who trust Kraken Pro for their crypto trading needs. Visit pro.kraken.com to get started today.
Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world. And now, something big is happening. Introducing the Celo Layer 2. It's a game-changing proposal that's going to bring Celo's rapidly growing ecosystem home to Ethereum. Vitalik has shared his excitement for the Celo Layer 2 on the Celo forum, so has Ben Jones from Optimism. But why? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages, like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability, and one-block finality. What does all that mean? Rock-solid security, a trustless bridge to Ethereum, and more real-world use cases for Ethereum without compromise. And real-world adoption is happening. Active addresses on Celo have grown over 500% in the last 6 months. With the Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas using ERC-20 tokens. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forum. Follow at Celo.org on Twitter and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
All right, guys, back to the main reason Bitcoin might be up that everyone's talking about and I think has a lot of substance, the Bitcoin ETF. We know that's coming. We think it's coming. We've had analysts predicting it, 90 to 95% certainty by January 2024. Did something new happen this week? That's the big question. Is that why Bitcoin is up? A few things did happen this week, actually. And the first is this. BlackRock is now seeding the spot Bitcoin ETF. Okay, seeding it. That means BlackRock is putting some initial funding from their bank and broker to create a few units of Bitcoin. It does not mean
BlackRock's actually buying Bitcoin.
They're buying Bitcoin. Now,
BlackRock's
buying
Bitcoin to prepare for their ETF.
Yes, they have to do this. Like, hey, does it work? Is this thing on? It's testing, right? Like they're just buying some Bitcoin. Now, this is not buying in bulk.
Just setting up my Bitcoin ETF.
Yeah. But the fact that, so they're not buying in bulk yet, but the fact that they are doing it and they're doing it publicly, they've just like announced to the world that they're doing this, that is a sign that we are getting closer. So that is a thing that certainly happened this week. But I think the big question on everyone's mind is when the Bitcoin ETF comes, because it is coming, will it make a material impact on Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin itself? Or will this all be front run? Will this all be priced in by the time we get a new Bitcoin ETF? Or will there even be any demand? I mean, like a lot of people would argue, we've had Bitcoin already. You can go buy Bitcoin in your Kraken, thanks to Kraken, exchange right now. Anywhere in the basically anywhere in the world. And so why do U.S. residents need a Bitcoin ETF? Well, this is a tweet from Eleanor Terrett. She is a reporter for Fox Business. What is she saying here, David?
She says, I've been speaking to a couple of TradFi execs regarding the Bitcoin spot ETF. And I think it's interesting how mind blown most of them are about the level of interest that it's created in regards to the Bitcoin major rally. She says, quote, I mean, we're excited for these products to come to market, too, but this level of hysteria is something that we've never seen before. And she concludes in saying, seems StratFi can't quite believe how much demand there actually is for mainstream crypto asset investing. So this is demand, this mania, this hysteria that she's talking about are just from average people who have their capital, their money out managed by, you know, financial advisors or money managers. And that all the money managers, what she's saying is like all the financial advisors, like, yo, like, we're also excited for the spot Bitcoin ETF, but our clients are really excited about it. And that's what really matters at the end of the day.
I want to believe this, right? This is a very hypey tweet.
Right.
Sometimes you wonder whether it's just a hypey tweet somebody puts out there for like, engagement.
I choose to believe. I mean, well, look at all the things that are going on that we had the 7 different reasons why Bitcoin's bullish. Like, at least a few of those have to be landing with just normies.
David is choosing to be bullish this week as
believe.
Well.
Yeah.
Here are some numbers that back this up. And I find this analysis helpful as well when you compare that to kind of the normative analysis there. This is from Alex Thorne. He's an investor at Galaxy. Mm-hmm. And he actually ran the numbers based on projected inflows, projected demand for the Bitcoin ETF. And he based this on a number of factors. I believe past performance of the gold ETF. He really looked at the total sizing of the market inflows. And we'll include a link in the show notes to this tweet and some of his analysis. But he thinks that post-Bitcoin ETF, Bitcoin could see another 75% price appreciation. So almost a doubling of price. And that is based just on year one inflow, so in the first year. And he gets to a number of about $15 billion of net new buying activity into Bitcoin in year one. And he kind of backs into that number based on the number of broker-dealer purchases that are going on, the number of bank purchases, the number of registered investment advisor purchases. And I think it's some compelling numbers. So he's saying $15 billion in inflows into Bitcoin, net new purchases of Bitcoin in year one. And then he's projecting $26 billion in year two and almost $40 billion of Bitcoin inflows in year three. So that's a lot of inflows, man.
That's a lot of inflows. And importantly, this amount of inflows doesn't end there. That's not the only new inflows. There will be inflows that will buy Bitcoin ahead of these flows, because they know that these flows are coming. What do we say at the start of every episode? Front run the opportunity. Like, if you are buying Bitcoin in your stock brokerages through the Bitcoin ETF, you are no longer early. I would say actually the mark of like being early to Bitcoin is buying Bitcoin before the ETF exists.
I think you're right, David.
I think once the ETF exists, you are there's no more early buyers of Bitcoin.
Yeah, you're not in the early adopter. You're maybe early majority or something like that.
Early majority. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Importantly, like, this $15 billion of new buy pressure that's coming this year is going to incur like another 15-ish billion dollars of just like people buying because other people are buying. And that's what a bull market is.
Yeah. And I don't think crypto natives fully understand the size of this potential market. Right. Mm-hmm. So here's some numbers here. The size of assets under management that get exposure when there's a good Bitcoin ETF. Broker dealers alone, they have $27 trillion in assets. Again, that's the total market size of this. Banks have about $12 trillion that they could be deployed. And the big one that I think I'm most interested in is the Edward Jones guy. All right, it's like the financial advisor in the U.S. That is going to say, hey, now I have a product that I can sell my 401k users who come to me for financial advice. That is almost $10 trillion in assets that registered investment advisors have in the U.S. So it's an absolutely huge market. The other thing I think with all of this kind of pressure on the SEC to like make this happen, the bigger question is when we zoom out is, why don't we have a Bitcoin ETF already? Like, that's at some level, David, that's the more amazing part, that the U.S. still doesn't have a Bitcoin ETF. What's this tweet from Nate Grassi say?
Yeah, he just like lists all the terrible ways that we have Bitcoin exposure through like normal typical trad rails. You know, GBTC, which is off 25%. MicroStrategy, which is, you know, like a proxy Bitcoin exposure and is being used for Bitcoin exposure, even though it's a company. Buying Dogecoin, Bitcoin futures ETF, 2x leveraged Bitcoin futures ETF, blockchain quote-unquote ETFs, ETH futures ETFs, all before a very simple product that is the Spot Bitcoin ETF. It's just lunacy. It's just insane that, yeah. that we have these things in trad accounts and not a very simple Spot Bitcoin ETF.
All of these, apparently, according to the SEC, are safer than the Spot Bitcoin ETF. Right. Here's how Hester Peirce put it 2X in an interview. 2X
leveraged futures Bitcoin ETF. Give me a break.
Yeah. This is Hester Peirce on Squawk Box on CNBC. All right. Let me play this clip for you guys.
And I can't say whether or not the commission is ready to approve a Bitcoin exchange traded product. I've been thinking we should approve one for the last 5 years. So the logic for why we haven't has always mystified me. The court case obviously is an important factor in the landscape, but I can't guess as to my colleagues' approach to this topic. But
I can't guess my colleagues' approach to this topic because he's an insane person and he's unpredictable.
Oh, wow. Hester Peirce, again, SEC commissioner, is mystified about her colleagues' approach to this. It's not just the Bitcoin ETF either. You know what's actually underpriced and probably like undervalued by the market right now, David?
I have a guess.
It's the Ethereum spot ETF. And that is coming too. This is from James Seffert. He is talking about the filings for a spot Ethereum ETF. This one specifically, he's got pointed as the fifth currently active spot for Ethereum ETF. Finally,
the Bitcoin spot ETF has like in the teens of number of contenders. Ethereum's got five. ETH has five spot ETFs. So like the count the number of catalysts that we have, bro. Like after the Bitcoin spot ETF, it's the Ether one.
It's got to be the Ether one, right? And this one specifically, it's got a deadline of July of 2024.
Ooh, I'm going to schedule a mountain.
Well, you should, David. Schedule a mountain for July of next year because I think that within months, it could be the case that we actually have an Ethereum ETF after our Bitcoin ETF. And if you want another prediction market for all of this, you can go look at the Grayscale ETH-E price chart or the Bitcoin GBTC price chart. Okay, this is, again, these are these trust-type products that don't trade exactly to 1-to-1 with the Ether or Bitcoin spot price. Because it's almost like a prediction market on when these products will convert to full ETFs, to actual spot ETFs. And the gap has closed on this. The premium to NAV has
Did I say? Do you remember? I think it was like December or January of 2022, right after FTX. Yeah. And these things hit their lows. Their discount, the ETH-E discount to net asset value, same thing with Bitcoin. I think it hit a low of like -40%. What did I say? I said that the bull market will very clearly be back on when we can recapture the lost capital, the billions of dollars of deleted capital because of the ETH-E discount and GBTC discount. Mm. We are watching that in real time come back to zero. Where are we at? -19, still a ways to go. But very much healthily off the bottom of like -54%. So going from -54 to -19% off of net asset value is the restoration of billions of dollars of capital into investors' hands.
Yep.
The degens are being refueled.
Yeah.
And so as this approaches zero and we actually restore that billions of dollars of capital, this like frees up so much capital to get unlocked.
Yeah. Well, in the bull market, it'll probably go above zero, too. It'll go into the positive territory.
Well, if it turns into an ETF, it'll always be at one, finally.
And that was Ether, the numbers that you gave. I mean, it was down about 50% for Bitcoin as well, and now it's only down 14%. Yeah. So the gap is closing, and I think that's a prediction market on when Bitcoin, when Ether, ETF. So that's what's going on in the world of ETFs. David, there's some lies going on in mainstream media this week about crypto, about specifically crypto and its ties to terrorism. Mm-hmm. What are we going to talk about next?
The Wall Street Journal is being called out for reporting misinformation that everyone knows is misinformation about how crypto is involved with terrorist financing, specifically with Hamas. Now, other organizations have also reported similar things, and then they have retracted the statements after organizations like Chainalysis and other agencies reported showed that the numbers were wrong, and they then provided the correct numbers, but not the Wall Street Journal. Now, that would be one thing if the Wall Street Journal was just taking their, you know, journalistic malpractice to the face and just, you know, whatever, and dealing with it. Except Elizabeth Warren is using this and citing the Wall Street Journal in letters to the White House. Ryan, we've shown this particular Wall Street Journal article on the Weekly Roll-Up before. It was either 2 or 3 weeks ago, right after Hamas invaded Israel and had the start of the conflict there. And we talked about the use of crypto and how crypto ended up in the hands of Hamas. This is the article in question. So here we are, 2-3 weeks later, after another individual, Sam Callahan, who tweeted out, "It has been confirmed that this article is patently false. It was straight up fake news."
So we're looking at the title of this article: "Hamas militants behind Israel attack raised millions in crypto." And here's millions the subtitle in this article.
Yep.
"Digital currency transactions highlight how U.S. and Israel have struggled to sever the access of Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and Hezbollah to foreign funding." So again, tying crypto directly to terrorism. And then last week, David, remember we talked about that letter that was signed by 100 members of Congress that Elizabeth Warren spearheaded, which is basically like, hey, we've got to do something about cryptocurrency and terrorists.
Right.
And like the use of cryptocurrency by terrorists, in particular Hamas. And she sourced and cited this very article. That's the problem.
Article. Yeah. So Sam Callahan, a Twitter account, says, "Last week, the Wall Street Journal published an article claiming about $90 million worth of crypto was used to fund Hamas, a serious claim that gained significant attention." He continues and says, "It was confirmed that this article was patently false. It was straight up fake news. And this has been confirmed by Chainalysis, the people who would know, which ran the numbers themselves. It turns out the authors of the article mistakenly counted an entire exchange's trading volume of $82 million for a terrorist group's address, which is a rookie move. The actual funds that went to the known terrorist-linked addresses were substantially less." Do you know? You want to know how much less they were, Ryan?
Versus 90 million.
82 million. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
$450,000.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That they
these are different numbers.
Million.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like you said, Ryan, Senator Warren wrote this letter to the White House where she said, "Indeed, between August and 2021 and the past June, the two groups raised over $130 million in crypto."
Whoa.
"As the Wall Street Journal reports, researchers who study Hamas's financing said crypto remains a number one tool the groups use to raise funds." So here is where Chainalysis comes in with their statement.
Look what's cited here, too, in this letter, David.
The number one citation, the Wall Street Journal. Chainalysis released their statement saying, "Terrorist orgs have historically used and will likely to use and continue to use traditional fiat-based methods like financial institutions and shell companies, a.k.a. TradFi, as their primary financing vehicles. But some terrorist organizations raise, store, and transfer funds using cryptocurrency." This is true. "Thanks to the transparency of the blockchain, crypto has for years proven to be an ineffective tool for terrorism financing at scale. But even small amounts of funds can do tremendous damage and should be investigated." Again, they're not discounting this. They're just trying to put it in perspective. "Taking a closer look at these counterparties, we find more evidence that it's likely that some kind of service provider, and of the roughly $82 million in crypto received by this address, about $450,000 worth of funds were transferred to the known terror-affiliated wallet." So basically saying the number is $450,000, not millions and millions and millions.
It's a big freaking difference here.
It's a very big difference. Yeah. So Nick Carter comes in, and Nick Carter, I would say he's written like academic articles before. He knows a thing or two about journalistic integrity. So he gives this recap saying, "First, Wall Street journalists," and then names them, "Angus Berwick and Ian Talley, write a flurry of articles citing Elliptic Data," which is another publisher, we'll talk about that in a sec, claiming that PIJ, a Hamas affiliate, raised $93 million in crypto. Second, Senator Warren uses this article to claim Hamas raised over $130 million in crypto. Don't know where that number came from. This article is the sole citation in her letter, the Bloomberg article. The entire letter, Elizabeth Warren's letter, depends on the Wall Street Journal article. Third, over 100 members of Congress signed the letter, which asks for Biden administration to further crack down on crypto. Next, Chainalysis comes out with an article disputing the Wall Street Journal claims, saying that instead of the $82 million, the real figure is around $450,000. And last, the Wall Street Journal refuses to follow up or retract, instead writing more articles relying on their claims.
Wow.
Oof. Oof.
That Oof. Is bad. So they're refusing to redact that too. So the source of the data that the Wall Street Journal, they weren't looking at these on-chain transactions. Mm-hmm. They were getting this from a company called Elliptic. Mm-hmm. What did Elliptic say in the aftermath of this?
Oh, well, they wrote an article, Ryan, saying setting the record straight on crypto crowdfunding by Hamas. And they corrected the record and issued a retraction of their original statement. In the first bullet point here, there's no evidence to support the assertion that Hamas has received significant volumes of crypto donations. So correcting the record. So somebody's doing it. Somebody's going back and saying, yo, we effed up, sorry. Just not the Wall Street Journal. Then here's Ian Talley, the author of the article that came out of the Wall Street Journal, just absolutely doubling down.
And really?
Yo, you know, digging his heels in.
They're doubling down on this?
Oh, it's they're not doubling down bigly. Yeah. Uh-huh.
What? Do they have any data? Are they like actually bringing? Oh my God. No, I see this
okay.
Tweet.
So this tweet that which is this guy trying the you got the Twitter community notes to correct the record, which is how you know you're off. And so this tweet from the author gets 155 likes. And then Nick Carter follows up and says, you are a liar. You have been found out. Now do your job and publish a retraction. Salvage some dignity, coming in at 1,300 likes. That is a massive ratio.
This reporter is just doubling down on misinformation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not great. So Nick Carter follows up and he retweets, welcome back to Twitter. I see that we have your attention. Elliptic and Chainalysis have rebutted your analysis. Your kingdom is crumbling, but yeah, dig your heels in further to see where it takes you. He just is on a roll, man. Another take from Nick saying, make no mistake, journalists and senators lying about crypto financing terrorism and pinning the blame on us is an existential threat. If they win that information war, there is no limit to government aggression. This is our battle we need to win, and the truth is on our side. And so here's the meme from Nick Carter. He's got the SpongeBob meme of to-do list, and it's one, Elliptic corrects the record, which is done. Next, Wall Street Journal retracts. Next, Warren letter, signatories retract. Last, Liz Warren fesses up.
If we get any of these,
That last one's not happening.
Brian Armstrong weighing in too, saying, this is crazy. An inaccurate Wall Street Journal article caused 20% of Congress to sign a letter. That's scary. It's crazy. Elliptic has now refuted the evidence in the Wall Street Journal article. Wall Street Journal, will you issue a retraction/correction? They haven't yet. At the time of recording, Wall Street Journal has not retracted this.
Balaji comes in and says, the refutation could not be stronger. Will Wall Street Journal's authors Ian Talley and Berwick correct the record? Quote, there is no evidence to support the assertion that Hamas has received significant volumes of crypto donations. That's the line I read earlier.
David, it's not great, but the good news is, as Hester Peirce has said before, we have the courts on our side. We also have truth on our side.
And I love having the truth on my side.
It's in the blockchain. Go look up the data yourself.
It's on the blockchain. It's
right? I mean, the records are clear here. What's going on with our friend and my doppelganger, SBF, this week, David?
So SBF is going to take the stand. He's going to do the thing that he is so good at, which is just running his mouth.
Yeah.
There's been a bunch of analysis as to like why is SBF going to
why
take the stand?
Why is he deciding?
Like,
this is risky, right?
Why is he doing this? Yeah. And so here's how this has gone so far. Sam's defense has struggled, as you could imagine. The prospects for Sam don't look good. The judge has even denied 7 expert witnesses that Sam would like to have proposed to call to the trial. I don't know why, but not great. Like, you're just being removed of your collateral. I would suppose that, like, maybe there's a handful of reasons. They've also denied many of Sam Bankman-Fried's arguments and evidence. And he, of course, faces decades in prison if he's convicted. So it's not looking great. So this is potentially a new strategy.
It feels like a Hail Mary to me, David.
It feels like a little bit of a Hail Mary.
It's not going well, so what do we got? We'll just put SBF on the stand and hope maybe he can talk his way out of this. I think part of the idea is the defense wants SBF to appear that he didn't intend to commit any fraud. That prosecutors are painting him as some kind of criminal mastermind. He's just a guy that got, you know, caught with too much complexity in crypto and financial products. They're all incredibly complex. And hey, I'm Sam. I just got stuck in the middle of all of this. And so they're hoping they can paint that kind of a portrait. The thing that I think they're exposing a lot of risk to, David, is that the prosecution knows all about this, right, and they have the receipts. Here's a formal federal prosecutor saying this is a risky maneuver, and he says, I expect they've been preparing, this is the prosecution has been preparing, I expect they've been preparing for SBF to testify for a long time, and they've mined all his prior statements, whether it's tweets, you remember some of those tweets, right, David? Right. His emails, his texts, public statements, they got all that information that he made about the company, and they're going to just sit there and impeach him with them. I'm sure they will. So that is probably going on right as we record this, and we'll have some more info for you next week about SBF's trial and what happened when he took the witness stand.
I think there are some assumptions that we can make about how this is going to go down based off of past evidence. I will make the assumption that the prosecution knows everything that there is to know. There's nothing that Sam has been able, the cards that he's kept close to his chest, those don't exist because he's a blabbermouth. So there's nothing that the prosecution
and
doesn't
know.
So
is everyone around him.
There's no like ace up his sleeve. He doesn't have anything. It is a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
And I'm going to also guess that the prosecution is just like licking its lips. Like, yes, he's going to be on the stand. Are you serious?
David,
is great.
I think this is a real picture
of
Sam striding into court this morning. And the quote here from the person who tweeted this, when you know you're going to prison for a few decades, but the doc just filled your Adderall prescription. And this is Sam, just like cocaine confident, walking into court the morning for giving his testimony.
Full picture, he has his shirt just like not tucked in at all. He's a little bit scraggly looking. And then he has his massive ankle bracelet on his
pants. Noticed that.
Yeah.
I should have added that to my costume, David.
For sure. Maybe you do. We can't really tell.
Yeah.
Anyways, the other assumption, I don't have any evidence for this, but I'm going to go ahead and guess that after having spent so much time with Sam, that Sam's lawyer is like, I'm effing tired of this kid and I don't really have any more patience for him. So F it. Just put him on the stand.
I don't know. Maybe. I do think it's a YOLO type of move here. So, David, we got more to talk about, though. What's coming up?
Yeah, I got some more tinfoil hat stuff for you guys. The Uni chain is on. Ethereum is deployed an OP stack Uni chain. Who did this? We'll talk about that. Was the DCG fiasco bigger than Enron? New York Attorney General coming after DCG and Gemini. And then also, there's a new Speaker of the House. Sadly, it's not Tom Emmer. But is he crypto-friendly? We'll ask all of these questions and answer them as soon as we talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, like MetaMask Portfolio. As you are prepping your bull market battle station, because the sentiment has shifted, make sure you know how to operate your battle station. That is your MetaMask Portfolio. There's a link in the show notes to open it up today. MetaMask Portfolio is your one-stop shop to navigate the world of DeFi. And now, bridging seamlessly across networks doesn't have to be so daunting anymore. With competitive rates and convenient routes, MetaMask Portfolio's bridge feature lets you easily move your tokens from chain to chain using popular Layer 1 and Layer 2 networks. And all you have to do is select the network you want to bridge from and where you want your tokens to go. From there, MetaMask vets and curates the different bridging platforms to find the most decentralized, accessible, and reliable bridges for you. To tap into the hottest opportunities in crypto, you need to be able to plug into a variety of networks, and nobody makes that easier than MetaMask Portfolio. Instead of searching endlessly through the world of bridge options, click the bridge button on your MetaMask extension or head over to metamask.io/portfolio to get started.
The last thing we have to clean up is Digital Currency Group, DCG. This is a genesis. Gemini Earn was involved over $1 billion in retail depositors' funds lost. The New York Attorney General says this is a bigger deal. The fraud that Digital Currency Group pulled, it's a bigger deal than Enron. Bigger than Enron, actually. What's going on with this case, David?
Yeah, so New York Attorney General Letitia James files a lawsuit against DCG for defrauding more than 230,000 investors, including 29,000 New Yorkers, of over $1 billion. So, of course, as we know, just to recap, Gemini the Exchange, the Winklevi, lent funds to Genesis, owned by DCG, Barry Silbert's Digital Currency Group, as a part of its EARN program. That some of that funds went to Three Arrows Capital, who, of course, got liquidated and didn't have any money to pay back, leaving Genesis with a $1.1 billion hole in it also leaving Gemini unable to repay back its earn customers. So the main allegations here are Genesis former CEO Ciocorio, I'm just butchered that name, I apologize, and DCG's CEO Barry Silbert.
You don't have to apologize to them, I don't think.
That was a hard, that's a hard one. I don't know how to pronounce that. And DCG CEO Barry Silbert defrauded the public by trying to conceal heavy losses that investors bore. Gemini knew Genesis's loans were unsecured at one point, highly concentrated with one entity, Alameda Research, but did not reveal this information to investors. Okay, so then the New York Attorney General comes in, because like we've been watching the Winklevi like throw poo at Barry Silbert, and Barry Silbert saying that's totally unfounded, and then the New York Attorney General comes in, is like, both of you guys knew bad stuff, and both of you guys are guilty.
Yeah,
that is why he's being charged.
Yeah, and by the way, the reason I said you don't have to apologize for the pronunciation of the CEO's name is they should be apologizing to us and to all of the retail investors who lost a lot of money. And there's some stories that we can get to a little bit later. But I think my summary of this is Gemini was careless. Some might say reckless in terms of what it did with respect to Genesis. But DCG, that was straight up fraud. This is what friend of the show Ram Aliwala says. FTX was worse than Madoff, and DCG was worse than Enron. So he's kind of agreeing. He says this thread will show how and why the New York Attorney General's request will force a sale of Grayscale. So Grayscale might be sold, probably will be sold as a result of this. He compares Enron and DCG. He says the Enron fraud involved the use of off-balance sheet special purpose entities to hide debt and inflate profits. Enron execs engaged in self-dealing transactions, and DCG, at least according to the allegations, did both of these and more. Through complex financial structures, Enron was able to disguise its true financial state, misleading investors and analysts, and DCG did the same thing. In fact, they misled Gemini as to their financial state. Gemini was like, okay, these balance sheets don't look good. These transactions don't look quite right. Can you send us the update? They fabricated things. They misled. They stalled. They didn't give Gemini the truth here. So that is the story. And why I think this is interesting and relevant, David, is because this is really the last thing that we have to clean up from 2022. Yeah, 2022 is such a mess, but we've been cleaning it up all year. And this is kind of the last thing that is in the end stages of being cleaned up. But just a reminder of the human cost here. Here's a sample of the human cost. This is from the New York Attorney General's case. There are 230,000 investors, $1 billion. That includes a 73-year-old grandmother and her husband, both retired, had their life savings in earn. Mm-hmm. All right. Not a good financial move. Mm-hmm. But also, there was some sense that the earned product was safe, and it certainly wasn't. It was being papered over by fraud. Mm-hmm. I think on the back of this, somebody could go like, hey, bankless guys, aren't you ashamed of crypto? Like what everything that your industry did? Yeah. And I guess my response to that would be, I think the crypto bankers failed us last cycle. Right. FTX, this costume I'm wearing, yeah. Barry Silbert, DCG, the CEOs of BlockFi, Alex Mashinsky, Celsius, the crypto bankers failed us once again. The crypto protocols themselves kept working. So no, I'm not ashamed of crypto. I'm ashamed of some of the actors in this industry. But once again, it was the centralized intermediaries who failed us, not the technology, not the protocols themselves, not the social layer of Bitcoin and Ethereum and the other protocols. So yeah, that would be my answer to that. And I'm glad we're cleaning all of this up.
Yeah, and this is, of course, why we say protocols, not people, code, not kings. People will let you down. That's why we are putting our financial system into code. And you named his name, but I think inside of all of this, with DCG, Gemini, there's one man who I think really ought to be taking more responsibility than I think even people are pointing towards him, and that's Alex Mashinsky. So he's not related in this story. He is not part of DCG or any of this. But think about, like, we saw Zach Prince from BlockFi go onto the stand and testify about the Sam Bankman-Fried case. And he had to reveal, like, some of the financial calculus that he was making. And the TLDR was he was gambling. He was being irresponsible. You said, like, the Gemini twins and Gemini Earn, they were also being responsible. Why was everyone being irresponsible? Why were all of, like, why are just normal people, like money managers running normal businesses, why are they just straight up gambling with everyone's money? I'm going to point my finger to a variety of places and also specifically to Alex Mashinsky, because BlockFi, Gemini Earn had to compete with Celsius, and Celsius was faking their yields out the yin yang,
yeah.
right? And so they all had to go out on the risk curve because they all had to compete with Celsius, who wasn't playing fairly. They were just juicing up their yields by taking leverage and being an actual Ponzi scheme. And so yeah. they pulled all of Gemini, all of BlockFi with them out on the yield curve, on the risk curve, and pushing everyone's, like, this 73-year-old grandma's life savings in further down the risk than what would be appropriate, because Alex Mashinsky fucked it up for everyone. That's my take.
Well, you're on a tirade against Alex Mashinsky. And by the way, I haven't heard much about his prosecution, so I feel like we need to kind of look into how that is getting settled. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I do agree. There's some actors that are worse than others in the previous cycle, right? There are levels of fraud committed last cycle, and you know, well, look at you. You just boosted up your suspenders mid-show here, David.
My suspenders fell down.
All right, give us while you got your suspenders on. Give us the Uniswap take here.
Unichain.
Okay, what is this? What are you on about, David?
Yeah. Okay. So remember our old episode with Dan Elitzer saying Unichain is inevitable.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's
You found it.
I think I found it. Yeah. So Andrew Breaking. Huang from Conduit tweets out, announcing the Uniswap V4 Sandbox, an OP stack powered roll-up by Conduit in collaboration with the Uniswap Foundation. Build your custom AMM on top of Uniswap's battle-tested contracts while still operating with existing liquidity instead of fragmenting it. Okay, so OP stack roll-up, that is the Uni V4 Sandbox. It's just a sandbox. Just a sandbox, but it's an OP stack Uni V4 implementation.
Okay. Does the value go to accrue to Uni tokens in any way? Is that part of the story here?
I think I need more details on that. If this was a true Uniswap app chain, it would be powered by the Uni token. Maybe that could come later. Hmm. I think this is right now. I'm going to call this Schrodinger's Uni chain as to like whether or not it is actually the fully fledged Uniswap app chain that like we were talking about in that episode with Dan Elitzer will be determined by the market.
Yeah.
But this is where it would start.
But this also implies, doesn't it, that anybody can spin up their own quote unquote Uni chain.
Maybe. Yes, but Conduit is in a very specific position to do this because they are a roll up as a service provider. Conduit is the infrastructure behind Public Goods Network, behind Zora chain, behind a lot of the OP stack chains. Also, we didn't have time to put it in the roll up, but Arbitrum Orbitz just hit mainnet, like are going live, and Conduit is also doing Arbitrum Orbit chains. And so one-click deploy OP stack chains, one-click deploy Orbit chains. And so this is Conduit saying, yo, we're gonna do the Uni chain. We're gonna do the Uni chain.
You know, this is the good news about, you know, everyone was upset last week about the Uniswap interface taking a fee for swaps, but the good news here for consumers is that fees will go down to the extent competition enters the marketplace.
Right.
And now here is some more competition. Looks like forking Uniswap V4 code.
It's not competition with the front end. So the front end will still stay the same.
But they could just fork the front end and put that
They don't own Uniswap.app. They don't own the URL, but they could just fork the front end. What I thought was pretty interesting, Ryan, if you go and click into the Uniswap Foundation Twitter, after Conduit released this announcement saying in collaboration with the Uniswap Foundation, the Uniswap Foundation had to put out this tweet, which says, "We are excited to acknowledge the initiative taken by Conduit in launching an optimistic roll-up and enabled a testnet version of Uniswap V4. To clarify, Uniswap Foundation does not intend to carry this to mainnet or establish a formal partnership." They're saying, yo, like what is the Uniswap Foundation's like prerogative? What is their like role in the world? They want more builders to build on Uniswap. They are saying like, yo, that's not our chain. That's not ours.
I think you've uncovered an interesting dynamic here, David. I'm not sure what it all means, but yeah, let's keep our eye on this, shall we?
All right.
By the way, I love the drama.
I love the chaos.
Speaking of new trains and chaos, remember DYDX? It used to be an Ethereum rollup. It is no longer. It is now on a Cosmos. So it's a Cosmos app chain. And they just announced that today, this was someday as of this week, we're proud to present and fully open source the completed DYDX chain. So Antonio did it, David. A lot of work to migrate.
Yeah, like over a year, right?
Yeah, well, that's what he said it would take. It's a lot of work. And here, there it is. It's Cosmos. I think it's the largest DeFi perps exchange out there by a long shot.
Yeah.
It is now on Cosmos. So that is, I think, bullish for the Cosmos community.
Yeah. I think this is going to be, this is now some data that we get to get. Like what happens if your app does leave Ethereum for your own Cosmos IBC app chain? Like, and then what happens next? Finally, we'll be able to take a look.
David, I think I found my bottom signal on NFTs this week, by the way. Yeah. I've been waiting for it. I know,
you're a huge secret closet.
You know,
NFT
I'm
guy.
A huge NFT fan, right? Yeah. But I'm just looking for like a price to buy. And I feel like I finally found the bottom signal for JPEGs. It's from none other than not a friend of the show, Andrew Tate. Okay. This is a take I want to play for you from Andrew Tate. He's talking about NFTs. And of course,
this is going to be the first time I've ever listened to Andrew Tate.
Really? Okay. Here we go.
Today, we're going to talk about NFTs. There was a time when very successful, rich people were trying to convince me to spend millions of dollars on a JPEG. And they tried to explain to me that it's on the blockchain and it's one of one and you can see on the blockchain. Who the fuck is checking the blockchain for my JPEG? Who cares? $3 million for a Bugatti? Fine, drive the Bugatti. $3 million for a JPEG. People can just copy and save the JPEG.
He said it.
No, my JPEG's the real one. It's on the blockchain. Look on the blockchain. If you go to etherscan.com, bro,
said etherscan.
Nobody gives a fuck about Etherscan, checking the blockchain. Even if I proved, after all, that I owned that picture, guess who would care? No one. Only nerds. It was a circle jerk of a nerd.
Only nerds.
Did Andrew Tate just call us nerds? That's great.
He goes on. He goes on a rant about NFT crypto influencers here. Are you ready for this?
Well, if you make a whole bunch of money with crypto, guess what you learned?
That's not us, though.
You didn't learn anything. You are still a dork, but now you're a rich dork, which makes you a mega dork. Money doesn't change who you are. It amplifies.
There you go. I could go on. This is a 10-minute rant, David, but I think that is the bottom signal for NFTs. We are all a bunch of mega dorks.
Which NFT are you going to buy?
I don't know yet. If you got any suggestions,
let me know. Yeah, a CryptoPunk.
Dude, they're still freaking expensive in ETH terms. I want
rant.
Up and
cry
comer.
About it. They're the first NFTs on Ethereum.
It's just a JPEG.
It's not also that people will throw a flag. They're not the first, but they're the first meaningfully highly priced NFTs on Ethereum with the branding of.
What are we talking? How much ETH are we talking?
I think the floor one is like 45 to 50.
Dude, that's more than an ETH validator. That's a lot of ETH.
I bet you one CryptoPunk will get you more yield in ETH terms, more returns in ETH.
You
terms
think?
Than
you think?
Validator.
You think a CryptoPunk? Is has higher returns. Is going to outperform Ether.
A validator, yes. Yes. A CryptoPunk will outperform Ether, yes.
See, you know what? I think I'll be perpetually stuck on this, where every time like it goes down in price or I see a bottom signal, I'd be like, but it's just a JPEG, and I'd rather hold ETH. Mm. So maybe I'll just never be. I'll never be one of you, David.
I'll suggest you a Mad Lad, because then you don't have to sell your Ether for it. You can sell, I don't know, something else.
Soul tokens?
Because you have to buy Soul. I know. I don't think you have any Soul. You have to buy Soul, and then you have to buy it. So you don't sell your Ether. Just sell your like.
Sell my Soul.
Dollars. All right, I'll do that.
David,
this is my Mad Lad is my Solana exposure.
Yeah. That's okay. So that's it. You're all in on Mad Labs and no Soul tokens right now.
Yeah, that's right.
David, in regulatory news, I thought we had something great, which was, do you know, the Republican Party has been really struggling to find a new House majority leader. And there was a brief window of time where it looked like it might have been Tom Emmer, which, of course, is one of crypto's strongest allies, friend of the podcast. He's been on Bankless many times. He believes in this whole thing that we're doing. Yep. At least he says he does. Peer-to-peer money. He's against digital authoritarianism. He showed up at the permissionless conference. We did a panel. I know that this man understands crypto, and he was nominated as Speaker of the House. So I put this tweet out, and I said, Tom Emmer could become Speaker of the House. He's just been nominated. Bullish. What happens? 4 hours later.
Wow.
It,
you jinxed it.
It seems like Trump nuked it. Maybe some others nuked the nominations that he's kind of not fit. You know how these politics, political things go. They knew House Majority Leader has just been elected, though. And his name, the most generic name ever, Mike Johnson. Okay?
Mike Johnson.
His crypto sentiment, he's kind of an unknown, like in general. And he's also an unknown with respect to crypto. So he, of course, is... a Republican on the Coinbase public policy app website. It's basically like unclear crypto sentiment, unclear, not enough data to determine. So I don't really know what this means for crypto. I just know we missed a good one with Tom Emmer, and I'm not necessarily optimistic about Mike Johnson. But
yeah, the last
unknown
person to take some leadership position was Gary Gensler. But at least it's more general. All right, so Ryan, this came across my desk this week. Song.tech. Sound familiar? Sound familiar?
Friend.tech.
Friend.tech? Now song.tech.
All right.
Now instead of buying friends, your friends' shares, you can buy your song shares, songs in Spotify, just like songs. You can buy songs. Guess what's the number one most valued song?
Never Gonna Give You Up. Wow.
Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. Astley. Yeah. I don't know what number two is, but Pump It Up by Endor. Somebody Bankless listener probably knows that. Number three, Sandstorm by Darude. Number four, All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey. Number five, 99 Problems by Jay-Z. One More Time, Daft Punk. Daniel, okay, then number coming in at number seven, I Just Need Daniel Allen. You don't know who that is, I'm guessing.
No, who's this?
No? Okay, so why is Daniel Allen here? And who is Daniel Allen?
Yeah.
Daniel Allen is a music NFT guy. And all of a sudden, his songs are at number seven on the charts. Okay, so again, this is just a bonding curve. It's on Base. I'm pretty sure it's on Base. And you're buying and selling shares of songs because that you kind of for the same reason why people buy shares of their friends.
Who gets this, David? Do the artists actually get the fees here?
So if you are a spot, this is the genius. This is the virality aspect of this and why I think that this is really interesting.
Yeah.
If you are the artist, where's Taylor Swift? Taylor Swift's coming in at 11 12. Cool Summer and 12. Yeah. If you are Taylor Swift and you own the Spotify creator account of Taylor Swift, you can log into song.tech.
Oh my God. And claim your
the
stuff?
Fees. Yes. Okay.
No
so,
freaking way.
Yes.
This is genius.
Yes. Okay. So 10% fees, just like Friend Tech. But all the holders of shares receive 5% of those fees, half of the fees, and then the other half of those fees are reserved for the artists themselves. So Taylor Swift has a claim on all of the trading fees that are going on song.tech.
Because she obviously owns the Spotify creator account.
Because she controls the Spotify creator account.
So rather than sue these people or whatever, Taylor Swift could just be like, oh, this is cool. I get money.
I get money.
And I get maybe more money than I would for streaming this on. It's another revenue source for me in the T-Swift empire.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so Daniel Allen, he has claimed his Spotify account. And so he's earning, as the creator, he's earning 5% fees from the songs that people are buying and or selling.
Yeah.
And how crazy is that?
I guess it rests on Spotify's ability to authenticate artists, and I'm sure they have that. I mean, that's already kind of a solved problem, right? Wow, really smart.
I think this is genius. Okay, so currently it's only 500 songs.
Yeah,
so, we're in phase two. I think the first phase was 100. 1,000 songs is coming in with phase three. I think this is great.
Let me go buy
song,
some T-Swift.
Song www.song.tech. Right. Pretty cool.
That's cool.
Shake It Off by Taylor Swift. Great Taylor Swift song. I love
it. Really? That's your favorite T-Swift song?
Oh, yeah. Me and my brother-in-law are big Taylor Swift fans, and my sister makes fun of
me. Oh, my God. I feel like that's not what a true Swiftie would say. They would go deeper on some of her albums. That's like the poppy song she has.
I'm not a true Swiftie. I just know that song fucks.
David, lastly, a new investment from Bankless Ventures that we're both pretty excited about. It's in privacy as well, which I think Bankless listeners should know about. We got some new privacy tech coming to Ethereum in the form of Nocturne. What is Nocturne, David?
Okay, so Nocturne. First, they've raised $6 million, co-led by Bain Capital and Polytrain, with participation from Vitalik Buterin, Tim Baco, and, of course, Bankless Ventures, which is why we're bringing this up. We cover all of the raises from Bankless Ventures portfolio companies as a inception of conflict of interest for you all here on the podcast. And then also, we get to talk about what they do. What does Nocturne do, Ryan? I'm so glad you asked. Nocturne is this innovation in the world of account abstraction and stealth addresses. It is basically your private Ethereum account. And so you know how you have an ENS name, RSA.eth, and you've gone to the ENS website and you've registered your ENS name to your Ethereum account. So yeah. There's like, you know, 0xF7342 and you've just registered RSA.eth to it. You can do the same thing with a private account. So you register a private account to a public account. No one knows that you've registered it. This is the power of zero knowledge cryptography. And then all of a sudden you have a private account. Using this thing called stealth addresses, your private account can make transactions that engage with DeFi. And so using zero knowledge cryptography, a thing called a stealth address will be generated by Nocturne. And a stealth address is a one-time use address. It's like a mask. You just put on the mask over your private account. You put on the stealth address mask. And then using zero knowledge cryptography, the stealth address will go to Uniswap and say, hey, Uniswap, I will prove to you that I have 10 Ether that I would like to sell for USDC or something like this. Mm. And then the Uniswap is like, oh, you do have the 10 Ether. The stealth address has it because it has a zero knowledge cryptography link to your private account. The stealth address makes the transaction and then makes the trade. And then the trade happens and the actual private account makes the trade. But the stealth address obfuscates it. So no one can see which account is actually making the trade. Same thing for sending you payments or receiving payments.
Where do the funds end up? They just stay in the stealth address? Or
they stay in the stealth address, yes.
What happens when I want to take them out?
Stealth address sends it outbound from the private account to a public account, and then all of a sudden it's no longer in the private account.
Ah, very cool. Yeah. Very cool.
The other cool thing that I think is really nifty here is that say you want to send me money, you will not have to say, hey, David, can you generate a stealth address for me so I can send you this money privately? What you would do, kind of like I was saying, you just have the ENS thing registered. You would go and you would type in davidhoffman.eth into the Nocturne system, and then Nocturne would be like, oh, yeah, there is a private account registered here. Yeah. Here's a stealth address so you can send them money.
Yeah.
And this is all happening behind the scenes. You know how like in Venmo, if you Venmo someone, you can just like toggle it private?
Yeah.
Like the bull case for Nocturne here is that you just have that button, send privately, embedded into your wallet. And so you don't go to Nocturne. It just becomes like you have your public wallet and you have your private wallet. Yeah. I think it's super cool.
This might be like one of the ways we fixed privacy in crypto, mm-hmm. right? This is that SSL layer for our crypto transactions. Very cool. This is going to be a public good. When is this going to be available? When is Nocturne actually rolling out publicly?
They are looking to roll out their launch of the V1 so people can get their hands on this in the middle of November. A specific date, TBD, middle of November.
Very soon. All right, David, what do we have coming up next?
Big congrats to Nocturne. I met them at Zuzalu. This is the privacy tool that I have been trying to get my hands on.
Much needed. Much needed. What do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, is it a good time to be in Ether with all of the regulatory threat around, or should we rotate into something else? That's question number one. Question number two, will the governments of the world ban Bitcoin? Not just a question. This is Balaji's take. We're going to talk about some questions and some other takes from the world of crypto Twitter. But first, a moment to talk about these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. Arbitrum is accelerating the Web3 landscape with a suite of secure Ethereum scaling solutions. Hundreds of projects have already deployed on Arbitrum One with flourishing DeFi and NFT ecosystems. Arbitrum Nova is quickly becoming a Web3 gaming hub, and social dApps like Reddit are also calling Arbitrum home. And now, Arbitrum Orbit allows you to use Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own layer 3, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum and provide a builder experience that's intuitive, familiar, and fully EVM compatible. Faster transaction speeds and significantly lower gas fees. So visit arbitrum.io, where you can join the community, dive into the developer docs, bridge your assets, and start building your first app with Arbitrum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free.
Here's a question from KiwiDog4. One of the big selling points for DeFi and crypto is that anyone can read and view the chain. How do we reconcile this with the ultimate goal of a fully private chain? I like and want privacy, but I feel like we're losing something almost as important. ZK proofs allow some verifiability, but can we really ZK prove enough to make up for the loss in transparency? It's funny, we're just talking about privacy before the break. Now, the question.
There's a reason why we have this question in here right
now.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing? What do you say to that?
Yeah. I'll kind of reframe this. Say, like, one of the big selling points for DeFi is crypto is that anyone can view and read the chain. What if I changed that statement to one of the big selling points for DeFi and crypto is that anyone can verify the integrity of the chain? So I think those are different statements, but I think that that kind of points towards the goal here. Using zero-knowledge cryptography, you get privacy, but you can verify integrity, right? Aave might be able to hide its pools, but it can provide proof of reserves, for example. Just being able to audit the chain is certainly valuable, but we can still audit the chain and audit the state of the chain and audit the integrity of the chain and the integrity of people's balances without actually disclosing what they are. And so I would actually kind of reframe, like, maybe the goal of crypto isn't to have, like, all of our world's finances out in the open, but to very simply prove that what we are saying is true, or the integrity of people's collateral, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
so I think we can have our cake and eat it too here.
I do think we'll sort this out the same way the internet sorted this out. Is, of course, we have a lot on the internet that's public, right? Like a website, you can publish it. It's completely public. Anyone in the world can access it, right? That's a great thing. But you also have HTTPS, right? Which is when you want to send your credit card information, that piece gets encrypted. Right. You don't want to broadcast that. You don't want that part to be public.
Right.
And so I think what will happen with crypto is all of the things that benefit from auditability, transparency, those will remain public. Those will remain on chain. But the things that we want to keep private, those will have an SSL type of wrapper where they're encrypted and private. So I think we'll find the right balance here. Now, I don't know that the governments will feel the same way, right?
Sure.
I think governments want everything digital to be, like, fully open to their purview. So that might be a fight we have to fight. And that actually brings us to the next question of the week from AlexRowe.eth. After the IRS episode, I started thinking about portfolio allocation. Bitcoin seems to be accepted by mainstream, but ETH can still be greatly devalued by regulation. How do you guys stay so heavily weighted in ETH with this potential threat? I'm 95% ETH right now, but I'm thinking I should rebalance more to Bitcoin. What do you say to that, David?
Yeah, okay, so Alex Rowe is saying, hey, TradFi is just totally accepting Bitcoin with open arms, but regulation is going to ultimately focus on Ethereum because of DeFi. How do you guys square that concern? Isn't that bearish? My answer is like, no, that's bullish. That's extremely bullish.
Why?
If the incumbents of the world, the banking system, the regulators, the nation states, feel threatened by something,
I want to buy that thing.
You're on target here.
Yeah.
I've always kind of had the take that Bitcoin is relatively impotent, and that's why Wall Street just accepts it with open arms. Like, it's actually just not a threat.
Yeah.
You know what's really a threat?
DeFi.
Yeah. Like ZK proofs. And so that it's a threat because it's valuable.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I will buy that asset over and over and over again.
Yeah, I do agree. The fact that incumbents are threatened is bullish. Usually, right? But that doesn't mean there might not be, like, in the short run, they could put a lot of regulatory pressure on Ethereum. And it's true. Ethereum has more surface area to regulate, right? But that's because Ethereum has more surface area for value creation. That's why there's more space to regulate it.
Right.
The other question I would have is back to what we said earlier in this episode is ask yourself, Alex, are you just doing this because Bitcoin had a really good... Are you thinking this way because Bitcoin had a really good month?
Alex, are you chasing the pump?
All right. Like, seriously, ask yourself that, because the crackdown has been real for the last year. Regulatory crackdown, and just now you're thinking about this. So I would ask yourself that. But the other thing, and maybe I just wanted to fit this mental model in because I wanted to hear what you think about it, David. But I think you bet on Bitcoin if you think crypto is more like a religion, and you bet on Ethereum if you think crypto is more like an economy, like it's more economic in nature, right? So, like, the most bullish thing about Ethereum is its block space being highly valuable and tied to an economy. The most bullish thing about Bitcoin is that it wins this kind of vitriolic, like meme narrative of like just passionate, basically insane people who are going to hold their Bitcoin to the grave, right?
Right. Yeah.
And those both of those models are true. And by the way, I think crypto is both of those things. I think right. it's
Ethereum
an economy,
has those people too,
it's religion.
For sure.
I think it's both. Yeah. Yeah. But I think Ethereum leans more economy maybe
right.
than Bitcoin. And so if you think of it in that way, then yeah, a regulatory crackdown might be bad in the short run, but I think an economy can outperform a religion. And when you tie those two things together, it becomes incredibly powerful.
Yes.
That's maybe a pie in the sky way to answer this too. But I guess the last thing I'll say is I have not rotated out of ETH towards Bitcoin.
That's backwards. I think you're going backwards in history.
Ever. I have done the opposite several times. The last time I did that, I bought some Ether with my Bitcoin was 2018, 2019.
That was so long ago.
Yeah, when Bitcoin was up relative to Ether. And I haven't changed. I feel no desire to change. I still have some Bitcoin. I have much more ETH. And I'm very comfy right now.
Very comfy.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about that. But not financial advice. You gotta weigh
Ryan
these
advice.
Things out for yourself.
Ryan advice for Ryan. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
David, takes of the week. Since it's Bitcoin week, we have
You're
a
gonna
question.
Have to walk me through this take, actually.
Okay, so here's a question I saw that was asked of Bology, and the question was this, which I think is a good question. I'm wondering, Bology, if you can talk about the prospects of Bitcoin being banned, and what you would do in that case, and how you would buy gold custodially. Bology, of course, ignored the last part. He would not buy gold custodially, but he had this really good mental model where he thinks that the world's nation states will actually trifurcate in three different kind of areas. The one is there will be Bitcoin atheist nation states. These are nations that crack down on crypto, right? So the Elizabeth Warren tribe, war against crypto, or maybe totalitarian China, which says like crypto is banned, right? Bitcoin atheist types of states and crypto atheist states. Then he thinks there will be nation states that he calls Bitcoin monotheists, that basically they only embrace Bitcoin and they don't embrace the other coins, right? So probably an example, proto example of this would be El Salvador. They're very Bitcoin friendly. Are they Ethereum friendly? Are they crypto? Are they blockchain friendly? No, they're just Bitcoin friendly. And then he thinks there will be a third cohort of nation states called the Bitcoin polytheists, which are like Bitcoin and then everything else, all of the other coins.
So crypto.
Yeah, crypto. And so he frames things as a Bitcoin, right. Bitcoin, Bitcoin,
yeah,
right?
Biology is a Bitcoiner.
Yes, he is. But the those that reject crypto, those that just embrace like Bitcoin maximalist nation states and then fully crypto nation states. And he thinks that the fully crypto Bitcoin polytheist states will be basically the economic hubs of the world, the future New Yorks, the future Singapores, the future Hong Kongs, that kind of thing. Anyway, so different than an outright ban, right? Mm-hmm. This kind of breakdown. What do you think of that? What do you think of that take?
It sounds like it's just like a level of banning as a function of when crypto came about. So like he's saying, okay, some states will just ban crypto altogether, not even include Bitcoin. Some will include Bitcoin, and then some will include the rest of the risk curve, Ethereum, Solana, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
I think that this is a Bitcoiner's take. he's putting a Bitcoin atheist, Bitcoin monotheist, Bitcoin polytheist.
Yeah.
Like that's a Bitcoin centric version of reality that I think that very few people will operate with.
My take on it is the framing of the three is probably correct. I think there's going to be a lot fewer Bitcoin monotheists than he thinks. Like it might just be like El Salvador and a couple of other countries.
Yes, that's the Bitcoin-centric nature of it. Yeah, Bitcoin's not that special. Sorry, apology.
David, what are you bullish on this week, man?
I'm bullish on crypto people being the spearhead against the corruption of the establishment. Huh. I think once upon a time, crypto people were considered to be like weird basement dwelling libertarians. And over time, we have increased the fold of who is a crypto person. Now we have like culture and art people and NFT people as crypto people. So like we've become more normal. Meanwhile, the state has increased its, I would say, its authoritarianism, its authoritarian curiosities. And we are seeing this play out with, like, Nick Carter's just vendetta against the Wall Street Journal. Balaji has been going after mainstream media for, like, a decade now. Liz Warren is being the spearhead of, like, I am the state that is completely misaligned with facts and reality, perhaps on purpose. And I think the crypto people of the world are ready to show leadership as a community to push back against corruption, to get, push back against the authoritarian tendencies of the state. Crypto people were bold. We're not afraid to call out BS. We have exposure to assets that go up when the state does bad things as a check on the state. I am bullish on the leadership of the crypto industry to show the rest of the world what's at stake.
I hope so. That's what I'm bullish on. That's an optimistic perspective. And I think we have that in us, particularly the settlers, the crypto natives who have stayed around. I can tell you that the rest of the world doesn't see crypto people like that. The rest of the world, they see this guy right here, me in the FTX shirt. That's what they see. He's going to jail. Yeah.
We are putting him in jail.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they are not saying like crypto people putting him in jail. They're saying, I think.
I guess I'm fully on board with your optimistic take, and I just think that we have to get there, and it could take some time.
Ryan, what are you bullish on?
I am bullish on the bull cycle, David. I mean, we called it earlier in this episode. You agreed to me. Cycle. Yep. Yeah. I think we broke the back of the bear market this week.
Yeah.
Like, I think we did it. Yep. The episode with Ledger confirmed it for me. And so I have like three resolutions for if this is the start of the bull run, for the start of this bull run. The first is, this time I'm going to do things right, David. I'm going to have a sell plan.
Did you do things right beforehand?
I did things okay. Like better than my first. Sure, so this will be my third. I improved last cycle over the previous cycle, and I want to do another layer of improvement. So here's what I'm going to do. One, I'm going to have a sell plan to take some stuff off the top, right?
Okay.
When... like you have a dollar cost average plan in, you can dollar cost average out at a specific price or, you know, time intervals or however you want to do it. For me, it's price. You know, when X coin hits Y, I'm going to sell Z amount. It's basically that. That's what a sell plan is.
Right.
And coming up with that while you're sober, you're still sober now. We're not drunk in the bull market. Believe me, we're still just kind of wondering if it's true or not. So now's the time to create a sell plan for me and probably for you, Bankless listener. The second is I want to have a stake plan. So I ain't selling all of this, David, at all, not by any stretch. I think ETH, Ether specifically, and some might say Bitcoin too, but for me it's mainly Ethereum and a little bit of Bitcoin, is a long-term hold asset, like long-term generations I'm talking about, right? Like many decades. So I want to have a stake plan of my forever hold ETH where I'm just not, it's not going anywhere. So I sell plan, a stake plan, and then lastly, I want to have some more fun this bull cycle. All right. Like last cycle, I felt like the first cycle I was worried, you know, and just not knowing what I got into. The last cycle, I felt like it was kind of a grind, you know, like we were just busy. We're doing a lot.
We put out so much content last cycle.
We did. And we're still going to put out content, but
we're still going to put out that much more content.
I just want to enjoy it more. It's over before you know it. You know what I mean? So
Time speeds up during the bull market.
Yep.
So I think listeners should definitely count for that.
Yeah.
So the perception of time goes way faster.
That's my plan. That's what I'm bullish on. David, we got a meme of the week. What are we looking at here?
What are we looking at? I forgot. Oh, yeah. Okay. So here's Tom Schmidt of Dragonfly saying, this is the classic SpongeBob meme of Squidward in the dark room looking out at SpongeBob and Patrick just frolicking around having a ton of fun. And the caption is, last cycle's fraudsters watching the pump from pre-trial detention.
We got two SpongeBob.
That's you, right? That's you,
actually. That's me. That's me.
That's you.
Hey, me. We got two SpongeBob memes in this episode, David.
Well done.
We
did, yeah. Everyone knows I'm a big SpongeBob fan.
Guys, going to end with the risks and disclaimers in a minute, but first, disclosures. David and I mentioned Polygon in the episode. I am an advisor to Polygon. David and I are both advisors to Optimism. I think we mentioned them as well. Uniswap is a Bankless sponsor. You guys know that. Bankless Ventures are investors in Nocturne. We name that in the section. Of course, we are long-term investors. We're not journalists. We don't do paid content. There's always a link to our disclosures in the show notes. Before I give you the risks, I want to tee up this moment of Zen. We talked about Tom Emmer. He could have been Speaker of the House. Moment of Zen is all about what could have been. but was lost in those 4 hours. So stay tuned for that. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. It's the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Happy Halloween, and thanks a lot.
Crypto, when it comes to the economic issues, I believe it's towards the top of the list. But again, that's me.
You've got to be ready with the right people to be telling the administration. They don't have to be pro-crypto. Just don't be anti-crypto. Be pro-innovation and let America do what Americans are best at, which is create and innovate.
We love it, right? We love Web3, the ownership economy, the idea that we can do business directly with one another, and we don't have to have intermediaries. Not that we'll never need them, but we get to choose them, right? They're definitely, a lot of people talk about, is there a choke point 2.0 trying to debank crypto? Well, you got to tell me, is this a coincidence that we lost Silvergate, Silicon Valley, and Signature all within a matter of days, a couple of weeks? I don't think there is any coincidence, gentlemen.
Okay, the key for us is to keep being positive. The courts have started to do the right thing, which is a great point. Basically pointing out what all of us have been saying. And you just got to stay the course, because the future is going to be about what you're doing. It's already here. The question is, will it happen here in this country, or are we going to push it out off our shores?
Gary Gensler, who I believe is one of the best examples of a bad faith regulator. This guy's been choosing to blindly spray the crypto community with enforcement actions, yet he keeps missing the true bad actors. He goes after all the good people in the space. This new area is all about people being able to get capital, to expend capital, to grow new ideas, to improve their lifestyle. I got news for you. That's not a Republican or Democrat thing. That's an American thing.
I'll reclaim my time. Scammers. Mr. Gensler, despite your years of rhetoric, like today, I'm convinced you are not an impartial regulator. Instead, it's clear that you are working to consolidate your own power, even though it means crushing opportunities for everyday Americans and, frankly, the financial future of this country. Even the federal courts are highlighting the damage you, sir, are doing to our constituents, and they're telling you that you don't have the legal authority to accomplish your goal of squashing competition in the financial markets.
This is what frustrates me with Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren, if she truly believed in the American value of self-determination, if she truly believed in individuals' right to make their own decisions, which she claims, she would champion crypto. She would champion digital assets. Instead, it's very clear to me that she's nothing more than a big central bank power-hungry leader who sees her power essentially being diluted and taken away by this decentralization of our financial system and our financial transactions, Ryan. She's desperately, along with the establishment, the institution, she is desperately clinging to hold on to that central banking thing, because that's where their power is. You want crypto and everything associated with it to grow here, to innovate and grow here, because that will grow the economic pie for everyone. Republicans, Democrats, that's the only way. I'm going to tell you right now, my belief is that's the only way that you can deal with the $32 trillion in debt.